भद्रं कर्णेभिश्शृणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः व्यशेम देवहि कन्यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So I have a sign chapter for the Lata Shanti, verse 21. Everybody agreed? Purva paraparijnanam, purva paraparijnanam, ajate paridipikam, ajate paridipikam, jayamanad divai dharmat, katam purvam nagrihyate, katam purvam nagrihyate. Purva, apara, aparijnanam, ajatehe, paridipakam, jayamanat, hi, vai, dharmat, katam, purvam, nagrihyate. This is going on and on and on. I don't know how long we're going to do this, but here we go. Okay.
We're almost done.
Oh, no, we're not. We've got 100 verses here.
Yeah.
Anyway, it still has its own interest. Purva apara, what comes before and what comes later. So before and after. Aparijnanam. Aparijnanam means, first of all, jnanam means knowledge. Parijnanam means knowledge which is complete, circles all the way around, so you can see from every side. So the parijnanam is a complete knowledge. Aparijnanam is an incomplete knowledge. Right? There's some understanding, but the understanding is not clear. That's aparijnanam. So here, for these disputants, these buddhaihi, these wise people who are vaisheshikas, the pundits, the sankhya, the pundits in the sankhya and the vaisheshikas, they're all Dvaitins. they are actually arguing back and forth and defeating each other in terms of the cause-effect relationship within this world. And say what this gets down to really is cause and effect. What is the cause of this universe? What is the cause? For there to be a cause, when we think of cause, we think of effect. Cause, effect. Okay. But within this universe, we can't really find, and even with the jiva, I'll get the individual, I'll get to that in a minute, we cannot really find a true cause-effect relationship. And the reason for that is that every cause of any given effect was itself an effect of a cause. And so there's what we go into like an infinite regress of this serial cause-effect relationship, right? So this effect itself, this effect was the cause of something else like that. And this cause itself was an effect of a cause which itself was an effect. And so when that's the case, any given cause is an effect, and any given effect is a cause. And so then, because of that, there is really no final cause. Right? And there's no final effect either. So in a sense, there is no cause and effect, because every cause and is an effect, and every effect is a cause. So I mean, so here, this is what they're talking about. So he's saying, this aparijñānam, this incomplete understanding, lack of clarity around what came first, purva, and what followed. What came first would be the cause, and what follows would be the effect. Well, this confusion, there's a confusion here, because every cause is an effect, and every effect is a cause. So it's circular, and it goes back. And so what Gaudapada is saying now is this problem itself, this confusion, is paridipakam. It itself leads to or points to this ajatehe. Ajatehe means, ajati means there is no beginning, there is no first birth, there is no first cause. It's ajati, unborn. It leads to what is unborn. Now, what do they mean by that? For something to be unborn. There is no first birth, because there's no first cause. So everything that itself, everything itself. Let me get to the second line, and then that'll make the first line more clear. He goes like this: Jayamana hi vaidharmat katam purvam nagrihyate. This is the problem. Dharma here just means a thing. He says, because any dharma which is being born, so if something is being born, if that's true, how can what comes before not be perceived? In other words, if an effect is being born, if somebody is the witness of that thing being born, you are also witnessing the cause from which it has come. Right, so if something, well, say a son is being born, right? Then as the son is being born, the one who's giving birth is also being perceived. Okay? That's how it should be. But in this case, the cause that we're attributing to be the one who's giving birth to the thing that is being born has itself been born. It itself has been born. And so it itself is an effect. And said it itself is an effect, you can't say that this thing from which this other thing has been born is itself a real cause, because it also is only an effect. And that goes back to what we call anadi. There's no beginning to that. And when there's no beginning to that, if the thing that has given birth is itself an effect, then that effect has a cause, and that cause itself is an effect. And when that is the case, you can't talk about anything that has really been born from a cause, because there is no cause. The cause itself is only an effect, and that becomes what we call anadi, a beginningless series which has no end. And if it has no end, where then is the cause? Because every cause itself is an effect. Since you can't see that, we should be able to say in the world, this is the Gaudapada's argument also, we should be able to say in the world, okay, this thing has a cause. This is caused by this. But even if we say material cause, he's talking mostly here in when we talk about like the clay pot, we're talking about the upadana karana, the material cause. But what if we say, like, for instance, that the material cause of the pot is the clay, right? But then the clay itself has a cause. Then this cause of the pot is not the real cause, because that cause itself is only effect of another cause. And so we can't get back to a first cause. That's the problem. And if you can't get back to a first cause, because every cause is an effect, then you have to say there is no cause-effect relationship. That's the problem. within this creation, you can't find a cause-effect relationship. And so then everything goes into this beginninglessness, into this anadi. And so this is the position that we've been working on, and now we're going to go into a little bit more detail on it. So let's go to the next verse. Ikijo is building, everything is building on this. Sato vai parato vapi, svato va parato vapi, nakinchit vas tu jayate, nakinchit vas tu jayate, sarasat sarasat vapi, sarasat sarasat vapi, nakinchit vas tu jayate, nakinchit vas tu jayate, svataha va. Parataha va api na kinchit vastu jayate sat asat sarasad va api va api na kinchit vastu jayate. He's going more into the problem of cause effect or one thing being born from another. He says at the second half of the first line, na kinchit. Nakinchit means nothing, nothing whatsoever, nakinchit. Nakinchit vastu, no thing, navastu, not anything whatsoever. Whatever you think of, no thing whatsoever, nakinchit vastu, is born. Nakinchit vastu, nothing at all, jayate, is born from itself. Right? Nothing is born from itself. Why? Because it's already there, okay? So very simple. Nothing is born from itself. He explains it in the second line. Nor is it born from another. Right? So nothing is born from itself, nor is it born from another. And he says, and so why he gets into, he goes like this. What is existent, no thing whatsoever, nakinchit vastu jayate, he repeats in the second line, okay? No thing which actually exists, is born. So something which is, something which exists, that can't be born. Why? Because it's already there. Right? It's kind of like a duh. Something which is, it already is there, that thing, najayate, that thing, no matter what it is, it can't be born because it already is. If that thing is asat, if it's asat, asat means it does not exist. Mm-hmm. Like the horn of a rabbit is the example Shankara uses. Like the horn of a rabbit. Something which does not exist, that thing cannot be born either. Right? Why? Because it doesn't exist. Right? So something which has no being, it can't, like the horn of a rabbit. The horn of a rabbit which does not exist cannot be born. Something that does exist cannot be born because it's already there. See? So sad, that sad goes with kinchit vastu, a sad vastu, a thing that exists, najayate, that can't be born. Then asat, the asat vastu, a thing that doesn't exist can't be born because it's not there to be born, right? Then he goes like this. All right, what's the other option? Sad asat. It both exists and it doesn't exist. So a thing that both exists and doesn't exist, that also can't be born. Why? Because there's no such thing as a thing that both exists and does not exist, nor is there, it can't be both, it can't exist and not exist, nor can it be partially existing and partially not existing. You know? This thing exists, and this thing that doesn't exist joins it. This thing that exists, and this thing that doesn't exist joins it, and that thing can be born. That's not true, because the thing that doesn't exist can't join the thing that is. The Swamiji uses this funny example. He goes, the one person who has some money comes together with a person who has no money, and they both together go on a trip. Okay? The money plus the no money come together to go on a trip. But the no money is not adding in any way to the money, right? So the non-existent thing cannot merge in any way with the existent thing to produce something, to cause something to be born, because the non-existent thing is not there. Right? So we have a couple of things here. We've got a sadvastu can't be born because it exists, but a sadvastu that already exists can't be born from itself, nor can it be born from another. So you have to go back to the top line, because it already is. A non-existent vastu, a non-existent thing, cannot be born from itself or from another, because it's not there to be born from anything, right? A sadvastu. And then a sadvastu is impossible, because the asadvastu doesn't exist, so it can't come into relationship with the sadvastu, the thing that does exist. So that also can't be born from itself or from another. And so this is an interesting dilemma, you know. What is it that is being born? What exactly is it that is being born? And then the Vedantin will say, this is what we've been saying all along. There is no such thing. It's all mitya. You have two choices. There are two. We have three. Let me give you the three choices. One doesn't count because the asat is one of the choices. Something can actually exist. In reality, it actually exists. What this means is, for something that actually exists, it is, by its very nature, it can't come from itself, from sat to sat, because it already is there. So the existence can't give birth to existence, because the existence already is. You see what I mean? If it were to come from asat, something that is existent to come from asat, that's an impossibility. Because the asat, what is non-existent, isn't there for what is existent to come from it. Right? So that means that what actually is, what actually does exist, has to be beginningless and unborn. Because what is its option is to come from non-existence, and that's not a possibility if the thing really exists. So now you have the option of something that we call paramarthika satyam, that which actually is, and what actually is can't be bordered by non-existence. How can it be bordered by non-existence? Because then it has to rise from non-existence and set into non-existence. That's not possible. And so what actually is has to be actually free from birth. It can't be born. Because what's its prior condition? If it already is, it can't be born. And if it is not, it can't be born. You see what I mean? If it already is there, it can't be born. If it is not, it can't be born. Because what will it be born from? And so being itself is timeless. It can't have a prior condition. So that's one option. The second option, the second extreme option, is that it doesn't exist at all. And that's kind of a non-option, because it's not even there to be an option. But still, we categorize it. There's the sat, satyam, paramarthika, satyam, the absolute reality, and then there's that no reality, nothing. Not there. So we've got these two extremes, and then we have everything else. Everything that exists within duality, that is coming into being and going out of being. These things that come into being and go out of being have no being of their own. They cannot have a being of their own to say that they are born, because they have no being to be born from. They don't exist other than being totally different, and yet we experience them, but they don't exist in any independent way, because they have prior non-existence and posterior non-existence on either side of them. So how can you even talk about them as something which is born when they have no being of their own? Something that has no being of its own is not born. So we use our good old clay pot, and they've used this father, son, and the seed sprout. They've used these examples, but now we're going back to the clay pot because it's so profound in your understanding of mitya, which is exactly the Vedanta position. All of this is mitya. Mitya means it has no being for us to be discussing it, as whether it's born or cause and effect, and all of these things are absolutely meaningless because it has no being of its own. Like, say, for instance, if you take the clay pot example, you have the clay, which actually is within the confines of this drishtanta, that clay actually is what is there. Okay? So the clay stands for the paramarthika satya, the thing that actually is. Now we say the pot is born. Okay, so now the clay turns into a pot. The pot is born. Okay? But what is the pot born of? So, well, of course, the pot is born of clay, right? But has the clay been born? No, the clay is. The clay hasn't been born at all, right? The pot has been born. But was the pot there before to be born? No, there was no pot there before. Well, then what was the pot born of? What was the pot born? The pot was born of clay. But was the clay born? No, the clay wasn't born. Right? Has the clay become a pot? No, the clay is just still clay. The clay is clay. It remains as clay. You know, its posterior condition is, its prior condition is clay, its immediate position is clay, and its posterior condition will be clay, right? So for clay, there's no birth or death or becoming. But the pot has come into being and will go out of being. So the pot, we say, has a birth and the pot has a death. Now, what Shankara says about this is, yes, this is how we talk in the world. The pot has been born, the pot has been produced, the pot has died, or the pot has been broken. This is how we talk in the world. But we're not talking about this kind of simplistic, in this simplistic way. We're actually analyzing what that means. Just because we have what's called a pratyaya, a cognition of the pot, you know, and we know that the pot didn't used to be, so the pot has been produced. We know all of that. That's how we talk. And we have a name. We have a name for the pot, and we have a cognition of the pot. But that name for the pot and the cognition of the pot, called pratyaya, doesn't make the pot real. This doesn't make the pot satyam, paramarthika satyam. This doesn't mean that the pot really exists at all. It's just how we talk and how we work within duality. But upon analysis of the reality of the pot, we have to say the pot is mitya. We say it's mitya instead of asat, not there at all, because we experience it. But we have this wonderful word, mitya, which means, yes, we're experiencing the pot, but it has no independent reality of its own because the only thing there is clay. And the clay has not become the pot. The clay has only become clay. Clay hasn't become anything. It's still only so. And the pot, what is the pot? You know? I mean, the pot doesn't have a prior condition. There's no pot before it, and there's no pot after it. And yet, there's the pot. So we say that pot is mitya, and we define mitya literally as that which can't be defined as absolutely real, like the clay within this limited illustration. We can't say it's not there. It's not asat. It's not sat. It's not asat. It's mitya. And you can't talk about mitya as having any being or any reality to be born or to die. Right? What has to be born or die or to be subject to cause and effect is that which is actually there. And what is actually there cannot be defined as mithya. Because mithya actually means it's not actually there. It means that it depends totally, 100%, on something else for its being, you know? Like, say you use the rope stake as a little different type of example, but the same type of thing. If a rope is misperceived as a snake, right? There is the snake, you react emotionally to the snake, you trip over the snake, you're worried the snake has bit you, your whole being is only in response to the snake. We totally accept that. But that doesn't make the snake real. Right? So does the snake have any reality whatsoever apart from the rope? Could you remove the rope and keep the snake? It's not possible. So the snake, the rope depends upon the snake, the snake depends upon the rope. From the standpoint of the rope, there is no snake. There's only rope. The pot depends upon the clay, but from the standpoint of the clay, there's only clay, there is no pot. Okay? So here in this reality, there only is the Satchit-Ananda, there only is Brahman, there only is conscious being. As conscious being, is non-objectifiable, to be existing as an object within time, to come into being and going out of being, and yet it is the one non-dual substance, the invariable substance, which can never be negated in any experience at all. All experiences can be negated, all experiences come into being and go out of being, but being itself is non-negatable. This being itself is non-negatable means it is sat. If it is sat, if it actually exists, it itself has no cause. Sat has no cause. Being has no cause. To have a cause, it has to have a prior condition. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the karana, the purva. Apara is what comes later. So what's the purva? What's the prior condition of being? It'd have to be non-being. If it's non-being, nothing can come from non-being. Right? And so being itself is what we call is ajati, and it has no beginning, it's anadi, it's beginningless. But it's beginningless because it doesn't come into being. But if something is beginningless, non-objectifiable, doesn't become into being, come into being, it also can't cause anything. It can't become anything. And so now, the main prakriya in the Vedanta, the main teaching methodology is this karya karana. Karya karana means, karana means cause effect. So, we get back to, what is the cause of this world? What is the cause of it? What is the, what we call upadana karana? What is the material cause of this world? You can say, the nimitta, the efficient cause, the nimitta upadana karana. What is the efficient cause? What is the material cause of this creation? Because we're only used to thinking of cause and effect. Okay. Within this creation, we can't find any type of cause and effect because every cause is an effect and every effect is a cause. Okay. Now we want to go to Brahman, to being itself, and say, Brahman is the cause of this. But what would it mean for Brahman, or conscious being itself, to be the cause of this? What would that mean? Does being become this? Right? And we have a big problem again. Then we get into this anadi of becoming, that which is beginningless and changeless and non-objectifiable, is now going to all of a sudden start becoming. Mm-hmm. What is going to be the catalyst for that becoming? For one thing, on many different levels, it has no parts, it has no arms and legs, right? It has no sense organs. It is just pure being, and that pure being can't come from non-existence. And so for Brahman, for me, for the conscious being, there is no becoming at all for it to be the cause of anything. And so what happens is that this whole idea of cause and effect gets dashed. The whole cause-effect relationship gets dashed. We can't say that Brahman is the cause of this creation. In that we can't say that Brahman or yourself, the conscious being, infinite conscious being that you are, goes through any modification whatsoever to become this creation. Because it already is, it has no prior condition. What is going to incite it into changing? There's nothing but conscious being there. And so that means that Brahman is what we call the vivarta upadana karanam, not the material cause going through a change to become the creation. Like prakriti is the material cause going through a change to become the creation. We say Brahman is the material cause of this creation, but itself goes through no change to become the creation. That's what we mean by vivarta. If that's so, then what are the drishtanta that we have for that? It's like the clay pot. Brahman goes through no change to become this creation, and yet Brahman is the upadana karana, the material cause of this creation, as that which actually exists. Because this is the problem. Say if you analyze this whole creation and try to find what's at the bottom of it. You start like peeling an onion. The Buddhists use this example. Start peeling an onion. You take any type of object, you know, and you start breaking it down into its components, you know, like you take this lamp and it breaks down into the base and the pole, you know, and the screws and the filament and all of the different, and the paint and all of the different parts. You break it down and break it down, break it down, trying to find out what's at the bottom of the whole thing. You know, you break it down, break it down, break it down, break it down, break it down. You can breaking it down into smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller names and forms. You'd say forms. Say you get to the smallest form that you can imagine, but as long as it's a form, it has a content, right? And so in the end, we have to take off the content. Another thing in this kind of dissection you have to realize is you're analyzing all these nama-rupas, all of these names and forms, as you're breaking them apart into their smaller and smaller components, trying to find out what is actually there, what are the building blocks here, you know? All the way from the biggest object that you're starting with, down to the most minuscule little cork or whatever you call them, the smallest you can go, all the way through that analysis, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. There's never any variation in that. Every experience that you have, as much as you dissect it or put it together, every experience that you have is, whether it be an internal experience or an external experience, whether you're dissecting something, the smaller parts are, the being is something that is the invariable. When you take that final form off, if you can just hypothetically imagine it, what is? That is, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Being is something that you cannot negate. No matter what experience you have, whether it's a perception or an internal experience, or whether it's a meditative experience, or whether it's nirvikalpa samadhi, where your mind is just totally with yourself, and there's no subject object, then what is that? It is. That is. The isness is the invariable. And what is the nature of isness? It's what we call swatta siddha. It is self-evident. Your being is self-evident. That's why we say consciousness and being are one and the same thing. So upon any analysis, what happens is, with this karyakarana prakriya, the karyakarana is transformed into the karana being Brahman and the karya being Nitya. All of this becomes mithya. So the Kariya Karana relationship collapses to a Satya Mitya relationship. Kariya Karana in the world ends up in infinite cyclical regress, where the cause is the effect and the effect is the cause. So you can never get to a first cause. It's impossible to get to a first cause. Chicken and egg problem. Chicken and egg problem. These are the drishtanta illustrations that are used. Chicken and egg problem, sprout seed. Which came first, the seed or the sprout? Father, son, these are what they've been using. Father, son, which comes first? The father or the son? Well, you can say, well, of course the father came first. The father came first and then the son came. Yeah, but the father himself is a son. Could the father, how could the father come into being if he weren't a son? And that, you get back into that infinite regress. Even in the West, we've used chicken and egg. Which came first, chicken and egg? So we get back into, always get back into anadi. But even the anadi means there's no beginning. There's no beginning to the sequence. But when we start understanding that, this whole idea of cause and effect starts to fall apart. Now there's another word that falls apart in terms of the first cause for the creation that falls apart. It also falls apart in terms of the jiva. What caused the jiva to take this particular, jiva means the transmigrating person, sukshma sharira or subtle body. What causes this jiva to take this birth? Well, we would say what causes it is really the dharma adharma, the punya papa that's stored in the sanchitta karma has caused this jiva to take this particular birth. Okay. So this becomes the cause, the sanchitta karma becomes the cause of this birth. But then what was the cause of the sanchitta karma? The sanchitta karma was caused by the jiva when they had the birth. See what I mean? So again, even in terms of the jiva taking birth after birth after birth, that's also anadi. That's beginningless. Because the sanchitta karma that becomes the prarabdha karma that takes you through this life itself was dependent on the jiva who was embodied accruing these karmas. Right? So that the jiva also becomes anadi. Do you think that there was a first birth for you? And the Upanishads don't accept that at all. The jiva also is beginningless. You have beginningless births. There's no first birth. That's enough to make your head crack.
Yeah. Mine just cracked.
They say in the Chandogya Upanishad, there's in this one section it says, if you think about this too much, your head will explode. because it defies your whole, the whole thinking, you know, that we have is within duality of cause-effect relationship, as though that's supposed to resolve somewhere. The cause-effect relationship we think of resolving into some sort of a first cause, but upon analysis, that's not true. It does not resolve into a first cause. The cause itself is always an effect. That makes it anadi, beginningless. But then your whole notion of cause and effect goes out the window, really. Right? And so then we start looking at, well, cause and effect doesn't work within duality, but where then is the first cause? And how that resolves as well, what you may be calling a first cause is Brahman, is conscious being, which is non-dual and free from time. You can call that as a first cause, but then it has never changed into an effect. So how is it even a cause at all? How is it a cause? Well, we say it's a cause which doesn't change into an effect. It's the material cause, upadana karana, which is vivarta. It itself goes through no modification to become this creation. And yet, it is what is actually here. It's like the clay doesn't become something else to become the pot. It only remains as clay. Mm-hmm. And yet, here's the pot. That's Vivarta Upadana Karana. It hasn't gone through any modification to become this. And so my being, and we experience this, everything needs a drishtanta. And to make something logically sound, you need drishtantas, illustrations that work for you. We have many illustrations for this. Your mind is an illustration. You have a thought, you have a dream, you have an imagination, you have a daydream. You know? You don't become that dream. That dream comes from you, is sustained by you, and goes back into you. Nothing has happened to you. You don't go through any type of modification to become that. There's no time passes for you. Right? That's the whole second chapter of the Mandukya. You are not subject to the time that exists within the dream. You could go through so many things. You could travel so far. They have all kinds of examples in the second chapter of this. You could travel so far, get so much accomplished, and then come back, and then you wake up. And then Gaudapada says, there wasn't time for you to do all of that. You're only sleeping for 5 minutes. I'm sorry, you couldn't accomplish all of that. And yet you were the one that went. No. What went was mitya. The whole Vedanta is that satya-mitya relationship. That is the Vedanta. Without understanding satya-mitya, there's no advaita. There's no non-duality. Right? And that duality, so there's no non-duality with satya-mitya. And then you try to establish any type of reality with this world, you get into this whole problem. You know, of cause and effect, which is anadi, which is beginningless and cannot resolve into anything. Mm-hmm. Impossible. So, those are only two verses. Om swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishah Go Brahmane Vyashivamastu Nityam Loka Samastha Sukhino Pavantu Kale Varashatu Parajanyaha Prativi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Barahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Pavantu Sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschit dukha bhak bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amatangamaya, om purnamadav purnamidam. Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
In Gambhirananda's translation of Shankara's commentary, there's a reference to the bow death. And it sounded different than what you were talking about before, the breaking
down. I didn't
down.
Do the bow death. I saw that too.
Yeah, I didn't understand what that meant. But.
No, it's mostly, I can do that next week. I didn't get into it this time. It's mostly Vaisheshika and Sankhya, what he's been doing up to this time. And then at the end, he added something about the vijnana bodies. It's a different topic, but I can do it next time. Yeah.
How do we experience our?
You're next.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, how do we experience our body and mind as mitya? I mean, I understood the definition, okay,
mm-hmm.
but. You still experience yourself as real, as Satchin, the body. But what is the...
You know, there are the experiences you have, whether it's the body, experiences of the body, which are really gained through your sense perception, right, through your sense of touch, or you don't have an experience of the body, or your sense of smell. All of these have for their content your being, your me-ness, the conscious being. So really, the experience of this body and of your sense perception in terms of the real content of what's here is the sat-chit, conscious being. So you have conscious being plus nama-rupa, plus name and form, really. You think that, well, most people think...
Yeah, go ahead.
That what you consider to be yourself is given to you by this physical experience of your body. But what you call the physical experience of your body is really just Brahman. Let me put it this way. Say, at the core of the physical experience of your body, what is actually there inside is non-existent, and the reality is this physical matter, you know, but underneath it all, at the center of it, is non-existent, then you wouldn't be experiencing this at all.
Right.
So the being that is you is the major experience that you're having at any given moment. Mm-hmm. It is the filler of every experience, including this body, including the thoughts in your mind, including your perceptions. The major filler is only conscious being. But the Dehatma Buddhi is so strong that you think that the experience of conscious being, which is really non-objectifiable, is the experience of this body.
Yeah.
So you get the two confused. But actually, it's like when you wake up from a dream, you know, what is left when you wake up from a dream is the experience of yourself that you had actually superimposed on this body. So you think that this body and your mind and your sense organs, your moods, emotions are giving you the substance of your experience, and they're not. The substance of your experience is the self, which is the truth of the body and the mind and the moods and the emotions. So that is what you're actually experiencing as you. You're just defining it as your body. Mm-hmm. But it's actually Brahman that you're defining as your body.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of big. That's a big thing to understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the body almost wants to scream out that I am consciousness.
You know what? It's like, this is the one I like. This the most clear. It's like the pot screaming out, I am the clay. I am the clay. And you know what? It is the clay. That's exactly what I'm saying. The pot's like, I'm the clay. I'm the clay. How can you tell me I'm not the clay? I'm saying you are the clay. Your body, you are. You are the self. Your body is the self. But the self is free of your body.
There it is. That's always the key.
That is the key, right there. That's the Satyam Nitya. But it's so amazing, like just like you're saying, the body is saying, the body-mind complex is saying, I am the self. I am the self.
And I insist that I'm the self.
And you're totally correct. 50% of the way, you know. You're totally correct. It's just that you don't realize that your self is free of it.
So it's back to that. And knowing that, it's slippery to be able to say I am free.
You need nididhyasana, contemplation, and vairagya. Vairagya is the bugaboo. But it really is. Shankara's bugaboo. You know, the thing that gets in the way there. Shankara even says in this one text that he did at the end, he just says, Vairagya is jnanam, jnanam is vairagya. Because you can't really have vairagya without knowledge. The knowledge has to be totally assimilated, because otherwise it's like saying I don't need this to be, I don't need anything to be happy. And at the same time not knowing the locus of happiness. I don't need that to be happy. I don't need that to be happy.
It doesn't work.
That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work unless you have discovered the ananda. Mm-hmm. If you haven't discovered the ananda, you're going to be projecting it out. Mm-hmm. Because it's not okay for you not to be yourself. It's like saying, I don't mind myself being lost somewhere out there. You're always going to be trying to get yourself back. And if it's projected out into something, you're going to be chasing that thing, you know? So Nididhyasana is helpful for somebody who has knowledge. When you're getting Nididhyasana is helpful because it gets the mind accustomed to being with you instead of trying to be with you out there on some object. You know? The mind, it just redirects the mind to the source of the ananda. And you get used to being with yourself. It's not like you have to walk around doing Nididhyasana all the time. There comes a time when you're not doing anything but Nididhyasana. You don't need to do Nididhyasana because you yourself doesn't get projected onto other things. So, but as long as that's not the case, it's good to do some contemplation. Just to give your mind a chance to build up that strength.
And if you have that strength, that's when you experience the body as mithya. Then if you have firmness of knowledge about yourself.
Well, you don't usually walk around talking about the body as mithya, this is mithya, that's all language we use in teaching. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not going to experience your body as mithya, but you're going to experience yourself as satyam. And that reduces this to mithya. Right? Because this always comes and goes. Everything that's changing is coming into being, going out of being, but you are not. And so the changelessness and solidity, if I can use that word, of your being becomes more dominant. So all of these experiences that come and go and come and go and come and go are taking place in you who are stable. So even in reference to your mind and your emotions and all of that, all of those are taking place in whatever way they do, but they take place in you who are stable. And the stable you is more to the forefront. Because the mind isn't all lost in itself anymore. Because it's recognized its own being, the stability of its own being. See what I mean? So it takes some time.
Yeah, don't we sometimes say, maybe I'm wrong, that Maya is the cause of the creation?
Yeah, but Maya has the same stature of being mithya. Mm.
Yeah.
We say it two things. For Brahman, upadana karana means material cause. Vivarta upadana karana means the material cause which undergoes no change. That's the vivarta. Maya is the parinama upadana karana. The upadana karana, the material cause that is parinama, goes through modification. Parinama means modifies. So Maya, made of sattva, rajas, and tamas, projects us in a very intricate way, and they go through this whole panchikarana of the process of its unfolding into the creation and collapsing, unfolding, collapsing. That's all modifying.
That's all what?
Modifying.
Yeah.
But Maya, the order of reality of Maya is mithya.
So then for the efficient cause, my understanding is Ishwara, Ishwara is also mithya, right?
Yes, but when we say Ishwara, we're talking about the Maya, which is as Swamiji uses this term, incidental attribute of Brahman. Mm-hmm. So it makes, when we say efficient cause, we have to be talking about Maya, mm-hmm. which has Brahman as itself, mm-hmm. which is what allows for the efficient cause, and consciousness.
Efficient, doesn't that mean intelligence?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
So that's where
that's
we
the
get
the nimitta. So we say the nimitta upadana karuna, the efficient and material cause of the creation. So Brahman is the nimitta upadana karuna because he's the intelligent principle. But when you say nimitta, you're bringing in Maya, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because Maya is like an infinite mind of Brahman, but it doesn't bring about any change to Brahman.
But even whenever you say karuna, you bring in Maya, basically.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
But when we say vivarta upadana, we're saying material cause. Mm-hmm. So we say Brahman is to be the material cause, he has to be the material cause of something, right? So
right.
We're bringing in Maya.
Yeah.
But when you say Brahman is the vivarta upadana karana of the creation, it means Brahman is what is actually here is the very substance, but it has gone through no change whatsoever to become that.
So when we're talking about the thousand names of Vishnu, that is names of Ishwara, which is
Brahman plus Maya.
Brahman plus Maya.
Maya, yeah.
But Ishwara changes. Ishwara's Brahman
always,
doesn't.
No, but Brahman is the truth of Ishwara. So
yeah.
There's no ignorance for Ishwara.
There is what?
No ignorance for Ishwara. Hmm. So Brahman has as its incidental attribute, we can say, Maya. So Maya is not some foreign thing to Brahman. Maya goes along with Brahman. It's just Maya is not, has no being of its own for there to be two. Like the snake has no being of its own for there to be a rope and a snake. Or for that's the whole thing to understand with Satya Mitya. Otherwise we say, oh, we can't have this creation and have Advaita. Yes, we can. If this creation has no being of its own, for there to make two.
So are Maya and Ishwara, are they the same?
No, because for Maya, you need to bring in Brahman for Ishwara. If you say, when you bring in Maya, we're just talking about what is responsible for the projection
okay.
of the creation. Mm-hmm. But Maya is dependent on Brahman for its being.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's why we say Maya is an incidental attribute of Brahman. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about Ishwara, you're talking about Brahman with this incidental attribute that we call Maya. Because Ishwara is a conscious being. Mm-hmm. If we just are saying Maya, we're pointing to the Parinama.
Mm-hmm.
Upadana Parinama.
I've heard you say many times, I think, Ishwara is Brahman plus the Maya Upadi. Is that the same thing as saying Brahman plus Maya?
Yeah.
Okay, so Maya Upadi.
Maya acts as
an
Upadi, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's other words that we Sameshti Upadi, the total Upadi versus the Vyashti Upadi. The Vyashti Upadi is the individual Upadi of the Jiva, the Sameshti Upadi is the total Upadi of Brahman, of Maya, you know? But Ishwara is the Sameshti Upadi. Jiva is the Vyashti, means individual. Sameshti means total. So then we call the Maya Upadi, Sameshti Upadi. We have all these terms.
Then why is it so important to, the vision is I am Aham Brahmasmi.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so important to know the Ishwara's as an Upadi?
Well, because the one who's saying I am Brahman is this Jiva Upadi, right? So to be complete, you need to be able to say, I am Ishwara. Otherwise, it's not complete. If you can't say, I am Ishwara, and can only say, I am Brahman, then you haven't understood that this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of Ishwara's Upadi. This Vyashti Upadi, this limited Upadi, is part and parcel of the Sameshti Upadi, which is Ishwara. Like the wave belongs to and is part of the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's not by itself, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of a total, it's part of a whole. So your whole life, everything about you belongs to Ishvara. It's like saying all of these cells in my body belong to me, the body, right? They may think they're independent, but they're really not. They're just doing what they're told. They're following the laws of the whole. You know, so imagine the situation, like, what does this little cell in my little toe know about anything, really? That's its experience, but it's totally taken care of by the whole, you know? That's what we taught Prarabdha Karma. That's why Prarabdha Karma is so important to really understand that, because that is your little piece of Ishvara. As a jiva, you're contained within Ishvara, but what is your experience of Ishvara is everything that's included in the Prarabdha Karma, the totality of your experience.
But I don't understand. If the point is to say, to recognize and to know I am Ishvara, then it seems to me, maybe I didn't understand what you said, that really the best you can say is I'm a part of Ishvara.
No. As a jiva, to have a jnani, you have to be able to say, I am Ishvara.
Right.
As a jiva, this body is part of Ishvara.
Right.
But knowledge is, I am Ishvara, because the conscious being that I am is the conscious being of all beings. Okay. All right, everybody. Let's call it a night, please.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.